Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Cult of Hockey, and I am here with Bruce McCurdy of the Cult of Hockey. And we just I found it actually, Bruce, an oddly enjoyable couple hours watching the NHL awards ceremony in Vegas. Expansion draft show, maybe because I was really busy because I was writing a post about the Oilers at the same time, so I wasn't, maybe more people were bored, but I thought it was okay.
It was way better than usual. Usually they have just the awards and they have 2 hours to fill, and they fill about 1.5 of those hours with some B and C grade entertainment or what passes for it. And tonight, because they had basically the two tasks that they were fulfilling, they stuck to those tasks, which was the awards and the, of course, the expansion picks. And there wasn't too much time for the B-grade entertainers. And you know what? There was actually some pretty poignant moments in between times. I thought the Dena Lang introduction, certainly Craig Anderson winning the Vezina, and also the tribute to Brian Bickle. Those were all three pretty, they got to me a little bit, you know.
The Bickle one, yeah, the Bickle one.
There's always personal stories involved, you know, and I'm glad they picked up on those rather than have some Vegas entertainer that you never heard of sing a song and change the lyrics to about hockey with a bunch of corny jokes or whatever. You know, there was none of that kind of stuff, really. Couldn't tell her. But hey, it was pretty minimal.
Yeah, the Bickle one got to me. That was just his emotion. It was pretty obvious. He was totally tongue-tied.
What a great moment.
It really was.
Like that last shootout, and he puts it right in off folks. I mean, beautiful. What a way to go out.
Yeah, the goalie was, I thought maybe the goalie was going to give him that one, but he rang it off. He had heard it ringing off the post, so good for him. So, Connor McDavid,
quadruple champion. Quadruple champion. He won the, of course, he won the Art Ross, he won the Hart, he won the Lindsay, and he's the cover boy on NHL 18. I mean, you know, that's the biggest honor of all, I think, being the cover boy, isn't it? I mean, that's the pinnacle.
That's not something I give a damn about, Bruce, at all.
Oh, no, but the players do, and a lot of the kids that play that darn game sure seem to. I mean, when they have the reveal during a friggin' award show of who's going to be on the cover of their... It's a big product for them, obviously.
But the good news is that Shirelli and McClellan didn't jinx their careers by winning those particular, the GM and Coach of the Year awards. So they can expect to be employed in coming seasons. So that was good.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
a good omen.
Well, honestly, in a sense, who cares? Because for everyone that says Peter Shirelli's done a good job, and I'm one of them. There's a lot of people out there. There are people that would take the opposite case that he's done a poor job.
There is a small, vocal, but small minority of people who will say that. You do any kind of, you know, we're constantly asking people what they think of this trade, that trade. And, you know, if compared to like the aggravation you hear on Twitter about certain things, you know, when you do a poll, you know, the vast majority of Oilers fans think Shirelli has done a fine job, if not an excellent job. So, yeah, there's people, like, there's the, you know, a faction of people who tend to you know, have a fairly high opinion of their hockey, own hockey acumen, which we probably all do. But, you know, they judge Shirelli harshly. It's not a big group, though.
Well, you have to judge him on the whole track record, you know. I mean, sure, the Reinhardt trade has come back to bite him in the ass in the worst possible way, and I'd argue that he made his own bed when he traded Davidson at the deadline. He wound up losing both guys, which is something that I actually wrote about before anything happened.
They'd be in a better spot now, for sure.
I'll boast about my hockey acumen on that one post. But, I mean, you can look at a GM's record and say, oh, man, he blew that trade. But it's like, I mean, at a certain point, it's like looking at the Oilers' schedule and saying, well, you know, they got 103 points in 82 games. With that Buffalo game in October, it sucked so bad. I just hate the whole season. I mean, let's get a little balance here. He does a lot of stuff, and he's had more things work out. And even today, you've written a post just now about Griffin Reinhardt being lost to Vegas, and I wrote a post earlier today about Matt Benning, the guy that was absolutely stolen by the Oilers for nothing, who's moved into the team and is helping out on the defense. There's a deal that worked out. And in the long run, you have to have more of the pluses than the minuses, but Trilly's had his share of wins, and his team has been winning as well. So.
Well, he's done about, since he took over the Oilers, he's done about 20 to 25 major deals, and he's won about 75 to 80% of them. And about at about a third of them, he's absolutely killed on those deals, about a third of them. And but there have been two or three stinkers. But overall, the guy has done very well. Now, granted, I haven't worked out that kind of percentage for every NHL GM.
Right.
And I, you know, right. I haven't gone back in time to look at McTavish and Tambellini, though, on the dog days of summer. I may actually do that to get a comparison for Shirelli's what looks like a pretty stellar record.
I know. Of course, all wins and losses aren't created equal. Winning the Philip Larson trade for a fifth-round pick doesn't balance out losing, as they have done now, the Griffin Reinhardt trade of two high picks for a guy that didn't work out. So you can't just say they're all balanced, but overall, on balance, I would say that the team is vastly improved from what it was. Yeah. And those who oversimplify and say it's all McDavid, well, I'm sorry, I just don't buy that it's all McDavid. I think the supporting cast has had a lot to do with it.
It's a silly thing to say, but some people like to say it, so, and there it's a free country, man, so. They're going to say it.
Yep.
All right. So the other thing I like, Bruce, a lot of the harshest critics of Shirelli were also extremely vociferous, loud, aggressive critics of Justin Schultz. And didn't think he was much of a player at all, if any kind of player. And guess what? Justin Schultz tonight, it turns out, finished 10th. Morris. He was ahead, Bruce. He was ahead of Roman Josi, Dustin Bufuglia, Tyler Spurgeon, Kevin Shattenkirk, the great god Kevin Shattenkirk that some people think the Oilers should go to all ends of the earth to sign, and Alex Pietrangelo. He beat all those guys in voting.
And he beat every single member of the Edmonton Oilers, none of whom received a single vote on the defense. So take it for what you will. I mean, sometimes the voting itself is a little suspect, I have to say. I mean, I'm personally not at all thrilled that Klefbom wasn't so much as a finalist for Lady Bing. I thought he should have won it, frankly, compared to this year's competition. And Talbot for the Vezina, I thought he was in the top three. I guess he just missed by a couple of points, and it's a small vote. But the votes are... Sometimes it's a reputation thing, sometimes it's a popularity thing, sometimes it's a who you know versus who you don't know thing or established player thing. But what the hey, our 20-year-old star won three big honors tonight, so I guess there's nothing,
And for one second, Bruce, all the quarreling factions of Oiler fans were united in silent prayer saying thank you for Connor McDavid. For 1 second, and then we started fighting again. There was a great tweet from TSN's Bob McKenzie about Klefbom. He said his three top votes were Klefbom, Austin Matthews, and Gaudreau. So Oscar Klefbom, we were talking about this earlier, 1,800 minutes of play and 6 minutes in penalties. Wow. And
30 hours of playing, like, top level defense against, upper level competition. 30 hours of playing defense, and he took three minor penalties.
And he wasn't aggressive, but he wasn't super soft either. Like he wasn't noticeably a guy who never hit anyone. He was okay in that regard. Like he was getting involved physically, a little bit more as he got better and the year went on. But that is an amazing statistic for a defenseman. We've seen it a couple times before, haven't we? With defensemen like that, Brian Campbell a few years ago. Maybe.
Brian Campbell won one, and before that, the previous defenseman to win the Lady Bing was Red Kelly, back in, I think, about 1954 when he was a Red Wing and still playing defense. I remember Red Kelly as a center in the second half, so this is before me, for goodness sake. And the great Nicklas Lidström, who is the cleanest hockey player I maybe have ever seen in my life, played his entire fantastic 20-year career and never got a sniff of the Lady Bing. To me, that basically repudiates the whole purpose of the award, quite frankly, and I can't take it seriously.
Nobody ever does. All right. All right. So, Bruce, I was happy that Jujhar Khaira is still an Oiler. I'm accused of loving Oiler fringe players too much, regularly accused of that, and that is I plead guilty to that. It's because I watch them on the farm, right? I watch a certain number of games every year in Baker, and you see players really excelling down there, like Davidson in the past, and like Khaira in recent years, and you just think, hey, he should get a chance. He can play hockey. He's a really good player. So I saw that with Khaira. I mean, I think Griffin Reinhart was good in Bakersfield this year too, but I really have liked Khaira for a couple years now. So I'm glad he's still an Oiler, and I think he's going to really help the team because he's cheap, and he can certainly play on the fourth line and maybe move up to the third and help them as well there.
Well, he's going to be, to me, at this stage, an upgrade on Matt Hendricks, who, clearly reached the end of the line probably this time last year. And Khaira is basically a third of the money that Hendricks is making. And he'll perform much of the same function, except for he's bigger, younger, cheaper, faster. I wouldn't say meaner than Hendricks, but he can hold his own out there too. And
he's a way better player than Matt Hendricks.
And he's got the best playoff beard of any 22-year-old kid I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah. In grade 7, he looked like he was Stanley Cup game 7, I think. That's what I'm guessing. Jujhar Khaira's beard. So,
and I'll admit I had no rooting favorite for who would be lost tonight. You know, over the years in the WHL, I interviewed all of these guys that were available. I talked to Griffin Reinhart. I talked to Jujhar Khaira. I talked to Tyler Pitlick. I talked to Laurent Brossoit. You know, I have a rooting interest sort of in all of these guys because I follow their careers like you have from, younger days.
Yes, yeah.
And so whoever's still here, we knew we were only going to lose one, and we lost that one, so the other guys are still here. Well, except for Tyler Pitlick, and frankly, I want to hear tomorrow morning that the Oilers have signed Pitlick.
Well, that's not the rumor, right? That's Bob Stauffer of Oilers Now was saying. don't be surprised if Pitlick signs with Vegas. So,
well, that would really suck after what they pulled off tonight, signing friggin' Derek Englund out of Calgary and letting the Flames completely off the hook.
You think they would have?
UFA.
Why not get Alex Chase on?
First for him.
Yeah, and why not get Alex Chase on? Alex Chase on can play hockey. He's a good fourth line player. Like he's not a bad player. I mean, I know you don't want to take Troy Brower or Stajan with their contracts.
No, they got that other younger defenseman, though, Kulak. I mean, they could have took him, and they still could have signed England on July 1st. But I think they wanted the Las Vegas native out for the big crowd tonight, and they just kind of made a sacrifice there. And Calgary got super lucky there. That was just a big break for the Flames.
The Flames, yeah, they suck. All right. Bruce, the Oilers, more good news, they kept Khaira, and they might be able to pluck a depth defenseman. Now, Stauffer is saying it's 50-50 the Oilers will sign Chris Russell. There's still Eberle, who's Ryan Rashog was on the radio yesterday saying, he's going to get traded, which is what we've heard consistently and emphatically for many weeks now.
Yeah.
So maybe there'll be a defenseman coming back there. Maybe it's going to be Russell. That's yet to be seen. But whatever the case, I think the Oilers are going to need a depth defenseman. And so Vegas drafted a number of defensemen. Who did they get? Who's on the list?
Well, first of all, just to summarize, they had to pick 14 forwards, 9 defensemen, 3 goalies, and 4 others. And they picked 14 forwards, 13 defensemen, and 3 goalies, meaning all of the others were extra defensemen. They absolutely stacked up to the max. In fact, apparently the first list that they had ready to go yesterday had one too many defensemen and not enough forwards, so they were forced to change one. So they really stacked up, and the list looks something like this. Mark Mathot, Ottawa, Jason Garrison, Alexei Yamalin. That one's got me shaking my head. Lucas Visa, Clayton Stoner, David Schlemko, former waiver wire available player, now a 30-year-old, $2.1 million defenseman.
Braden McNabb. 3 years on his deal.
Braden McNabb from L.A., John Merrill from Jersey, Colin Miller, now this is a player I really like, from Boston. Then the aforementioned Derek England. Oh, England, my lion heart, as Kate Bush is to sing. Shea Theodore, we won't be getting him from Las Vegas. He is going to be on their first pairing, or he's certainly in their plans. He's not going anywhere. Trevor Van Riemsdyk that they got from Chicago. Griffin Reinhardt that they got from us, and I think they are actually restricted from trading him back, even if they wanted to. That was something you'd need to do a pre-deal for. And Nate Schmidt, the last guy that they picked up from Washington Capitals.
And Schmidt played very well in the playoffs.
Yeah, he was all right.
You know, there's some... excuse me again, I'm still... whatever. There's a lot of names there that could fit on a bottom pairing. Not many top four guys there.
How many is the second pairing guys do you see on that list?
Well, McNabb, maybe. Theodore. Maybe Schmidt, if you're really stretching. Mathot, who's apparently, Elliot Friedman was saying, Dallas has made a big play for him. And I wonder what Dallas, wonder if Dallas thinks, man, we should have just signed Chris Russell last year. Because now we're looking at trading something for Mark Mathot, and he's got 2 years at $5 million. So how much better is Mark Mathot than Chris Russell? I think they're pretty similar.
If you look at their box cars, Russell had one goal and 12 assists this year, and Mathot had zero goals and 12 assists this year. So both defensive specialists, and I think Mathot's underlying numbers are probably better. I haven't looked at huge depth at that particular player, and of course he played with Erik Karlsson all year, which
what's that noise?
Probably going to inflate. That's my cat scratching at the door. You talk for a second.
All right.
All right.
There's that cat. Yeah, he wanted in. He wants in on the podcast. All right. What does the cat think, Bruce? Who would the cat pick, man? I think the cat's a secret Engelin fan.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
I don't hate Engelin, but he was, why didn't Vegas take Eric Greiba from the Oilers and sign him as a UFA? Because
I'm glad they didn't do that, because I like Greiba. Now some people want Schlemko. Because they think he could replace Chris Russell. Schlemko has played in the NHL for a long time. He's like a 17 minutes a game guy. He's never shown he can be a good defenseman on a top four D-man on a good team. Russell showed that this year. Newsflash to everyone if you didn't see that this year, I don't know what you were watching. So no, Schlemko cannot replace Chris Russell, but. You know, there's a lot of people really worried the Oilers are going to go long and expensive on Russell. I completely get that fear. I hope I don't see that as well. But
me too.
Maybe there's some other alternatives still out there. Now, Garrison, I don't know how good rating these players, Bruce, is beyond my pay grade. I don't have a bunch of scouts watching all the games for me, and I don't particularly... You know, in terms of like actually saying this, we should go after this player. The numbers aren't definitive enough. No numbers are definitive enough for me to use them in that way. Like you can kind of make a guess, but to actually like argue strenuously in favor of this player or that player, I find it kind of hard to do. So I can't really say, but you know, Garrison has been a top four defenseman on a good team fairly recently. So maybe that's like he's on a 1 year expiring contract. So, maybe that's an idea.
It's a healthy ticket, but it does die in a year, which is something in favor of it. Now, Garrison, he's gradually seen his role drop back. He was a 22-minute-a-night guy there for 3 or 4 years, and he's basically lost a minute of ice time a year, and he's now down to 18.5 minutes a night, which is still more than David Schlemko, as you point out, who played 16:45, which is third pairing with a bullet.
See, and Schlemko's got 3 years at two. Like he's a third pairing guy being paid twice as much as a third pairing guy should get paid. So I just don't get that idea at all. But and I'm not advocating for Garrison because I can't tell you. But that drop in time on ice, which is the main thing I look at when I look at defensemen, is how much their coach trusts them. And it looks like the coach is trusting Garrison less and less and less, and that's why he's been moved out of there. So that's probably not a good idea. good idea either. But there's a whole list of guys there. Maybe there is one who will work that they're willing to part with. Maybe there isn't, but we'll see. So, Bruce, the final thing on our list is Eberle. He's been on our list every week since we started this podcast.
Since St. Swithin's Day, as George Carlin would say.
So the latest rumor is Eberle to the Islanders, with that all familiar twist of the return being a cheaper, lesser, younger winger. And there's a few names that fit into that category.
No, it's Ryan Strome and only Ryan Strome. I read it on the internet.
There's Anthony Beauvillier. Now, if we can't have Griffin Reinhart, man, we deserve Anthony Beauvillier. And I don't even know how to say his name, but we deserve that player. And there's also, Brock Nelson, the center.
He didn't get moved, eh, Beauvillier? There was some kind of trade tonight.
He didn't get moved, I don't believe.
There's stuff to come, I think, also from Islanders. But, who's the other guy you just said?
Brock Nelson.
Brock Nelson, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
That'd be tough. Like, he's a center, although he doesn't win faceoffs very much. So, and Strome, as a center, is just terrible at faceoffs. Excuse me, he only took a couple hundred, but he lost 57%.
And they also got Josh Bailey, who didn't protect. And he actually scored more points than Eberle did this year. He got 56 points playing with Tavares. So
it's hard to believe it would be him.
A lot of his fans are probably saying, well, he played with Tavares. He should have had 90 points, and he only got 50, so let's get rid of him.
Here's the thing. You know, what's his noodles? Garth Snow. He's been there forever. He's never really done anything. He's got to be on his last legs and desperate. So I could see him being open to making some big move and being maybe a little bit rash, because he's got to convince John Tavares to sign there.
Yeah.
And he's got to do something, because they were a bad team this year. And, you know, so a desperate GM is a GM that you want to make a trade with. So I like the Islanders in that regard. Maybe I'm completely off base about it. I attacked Garth Snow last podcast, and it turned out he had actually worked out a fairly good deal there. In terms of, you know, how
the Islanders. His protected list was a sham, because the deal had already been worked out in advance.
Yes.
So, yeah. But
I still don't know why he protected Adam Pellick. I still can't figure that out. But maybe he's just trying to make everyone think Pellick is really valuable.
Really good. And he just is just a late bloomer, and they see great things for him. But
maybe he is, and we don't even know that, right? So, because how much did you see Adam Pellick play, and how much did I see him play? Like, not at all that I can recall.
Minutes. So,
yeah. Alrighty. So I think we're going to find out in the next three or four. I wouldn't be surprised tomorrow, Bruce, if we see find out about Eberle, you know, we haven't dealt with this in a long time. Do you think he should be traded? Like, how are you going to feel when he gets traded, Bruce? Like, your honest reaction, what is it going to be? If the return's okay, let's say.
I mean, what the return is always going to override the opinion a little bit. But, I mean, I'm always wistful when they move a guy that's been on the team 6 or 7 or 8 years. You know, you think, is this the one that's finally going to play his whole career as an Oiler? And I've becoming convinced that player is never going to happen. Yeah. And, Alex Hemsky, he was in this same boat 3 or 4 years ago, and he was able to hang on for an extra year or two, but eventually it became inevitable that he would be moved on. And I could give you a long list, certainly over the years, of guys that, you know, just got to the end of the line here and got moved, and Eberle is mighty close to that place. I mean, he's lost a lot of friends in the Cranberries, let's put it that way. And that's, at some level, that has importance. You know, it's unsustainable when the guy gets there's just no room for error, right? They said, give him another chance, he scores a goal, hey, it's great. But one mistake, and it's just right back into the dumpster.
That could be really bad news next year if that was to happen. So, I've been thinking about this a lot, because I've been going back and forth and looking at all. I must have written 5,000 posts on this, and a number of posts just looking at Eberle. And in the end, if I'm, as Simon Cowell says, if I'm completely honest, I'm going to be okay if they trade him, Bruce. Because the last two years, and your dog agrees with me.
She does.
He hasn't been the same player. And he's been, I think he's kind of been fortunate to get the point totals that he's had, in that he had a really great run at the end of last year with McDavid, you know, which is good. It's good to succeed with McDavid, but without that, man, he was just, he was weak before that. And then this year he struggled so for such a long stretch of games before kind of finally getting it together again right at the end. So I don't think he's been the same player that I really loved as a hockey player. I thought he was the Joe Mullen of the Oilers, and we could play that Joe Mullen role of that, you know, great winger, smart attacking winger. And I just don't, I'm not convinced he can do that. He just, there was so many stretches last year where the guy just couldn't seem to generate any offense on his own. So I'm going to be wistful too, but if I am completely honest, I have some concerns about the player, and I'm not sure that he's going to rebound. You know, so the last holdout, Bruce, is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. So yeah. That's where I draw the line. That's where I draw the line today. And I really do hope that when the Oilers win a Stanley Cup, that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is on that team, because he is a real favorite of mine. Just and I think he is. He's not played great, but he's played pretty good. So I'm hoping he has a role, and it looks like he will. So see what happens.
Yep. Well, we will. And when I say wistful, I mean, I'm not going to be brokenhearted. Let's put it that way. I mean, I've lived through enough Oiler trades. I mean, Taylor Hall didn't break my heart. Nelly Akpov and Justin Schultz. I mean, I had high hopes for all of these fellows when they first came in here. After a time, you sort of get inured to this hockey as a, you know, you know, all the old saying goes, if they can trade Gretzky, they can trade anyone. And you and I lived through the Gretzky trade.
Oh, that was horrible. You know, the last one I was incensed about was Pronger. But I was incensed at Pronger, so I was in that faction of idiots. So railing against the player for saying, yeah, I don't want a player, I want to play somewhere else. Like which he had every right to do in the end. That's, you know, I was like, he is a contractor. Like, oh well, yeah. It's, you know, grow up. This is the NHL, and star players have power now, so get used to it. And I am used to it. You know, I can say that if Connor McDavid one day decides, hey, move me, I'm not going to, fingers crossed, but I'm not going to have that same reaction that I would have had 20 years ago, or even when Pronger left. It's just, fundamentally understand these players, if they're really good enough, they can decide where they want to go. And that's the bottom line. So you have to have your head around that as an NHL fan.
Yeah, well, I mean, the longer I'm a fan, the more cynical I become, the more, in some ways, the mellower I become, the more just sort of, oh, yeah, well, that's the way the ball rolls and the puck bounces and the cookie crumbles or, you know, whatever. And, I mean, having been an Oilers fan for these last 10 years, you kind of get used to things not always breaking your way, right?
A little bit. It'll be interesting, though, when Austin Matthews decides he doesn't want to play in Toronto anymore, though. That's something to look forward to.
You want to go home to Phoenix, eh?
You know it, man. Oh, all righty. Well, I think we're good to go. So we'll do our next podcast, Bruce. My computer, I don't know. Listeners with a really acute hearing might be able to hear it humming in the background. It's been humming for a day here. I think it's on its last, my computer doesn't have legs, but its last something or others, its last breaths.
Electrons.
So the last electrons. You're the scientist, Bruce, so thank you for that. Okay. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for everyone for listening. And in the meantime, and in between time, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.